Hello, dear listener. This is your host, Matt Drinkon of the Eternal Optimist Podcast. Welcome back to another exciting episode where we are graced today with the presence of a man who is the expert, like the top guy in his field in the whole world. So we have someone today that just brings so much credibility and so much experience to the table. It's going to be an excellent conversation, I'm hoping, with Mr. Chris Cooper. So let me give you a little background on Chris, because some of you have heard of him and are like probably like diehard raving fans, and some of you probably have never heard of him, right? So for those of you that have or have not, here's just a little bit about Chris. First of all, he's authored dozens of ebooks. He's got seven other books in print right now, including some mega national bestsellers, which we're going to get into. He's an entrepreneur. He has been a CEO of a company that has grown so incredibly fast. It threw everything into a tailspin to a challenging place. We might get to that today. He is someone that is working worldwide to help 1 million entrepreneurs find success. So he's a prolific blogger, he's a CEO, he's a leader, he's a thought leader, and he is the top of the industry when it comes to fitness consulting, how to work and grow your business in that industry. He's the best. All right, so we're going to have a front row seat to just an amazing human today. So without any further ado, I'd like to welcome Mr. Chris Cooper to the show. Good day, Chris.
Thanks, Matt. I'll try my best to live up to that intro. That was amazing.
Yes. And I wrote that all myself. I did not use AI. Wow. I took what I found online, which was fascinating. If, by the way, team, if you're out there and you want to go down the nerd rabbit hole, Chris's website, I've been on it for a while. It's twobrainbusiness.com. You can just go ahead and type in twobrainbusiness and Chris Cooper next to it on Google. You'll go right to him. And it's an amazing website. So there's that. I mean, I didn't even ask him what it was. We didn't even wait till the end. We're just diving straight in. And this has been kind of a fun dive for me already for the past 15 minutes, just looking into Chris. Oh, so it's going to be a cool convo. So Chris, when we start conversations, typically I like to dive into the deep into the pool right away. And I'd love to just invite you to look at a timeline of your life and take us back in the time machine to two or three critical places where you felt you were challenged. And it can be childhood, it can be yesterday, just anything that was hard or challenging. We'd love to hear some of those critical points.
Well, thanks. So I was thinking a lot about this morning and just kind of mapping out, like, what are the big ones that might help other people the most? So I think the first one was probably high school. You know, I was not an athlete, not an extrovert by any means. I wanted to be in the computer club, and I really just had no self-confidence. I wasn't going to parties and I wasn't meeting people and I wasn't starting conversations. And a friend of mine and I were the only two people in our whole school who had the same lunch hour. For some reason, we got assigned to this weird lunch hour at 10 a.m. And his name was Ray. He was like, there's nothing to do. Everything is closed to us in the whole school. We can't even eat lunch. The only thing that's open is the weight room in the gym. Do you want to start working out? I was like, okay, well, Ray's the only person that I know that even has this lunch break with me. And so that's what we did. And we had no idea what we were doing. And The school had this really old 1972 weight machine. We had no idea what we were doing, but we just started cranking weights around. We did it every day. Within 2 months, like, the biggest changes that I noticed weren't really physical. It was, wait a minute, I'm making eye contact with girls. And I am accepting invitations to go to parties, and I'm talking to people. And when guys are horsing around in the locker row, I'm doing it with them. And I'm showing up for the intramural sports and stuff now. That really stuck with me. And I was able to carry that newfound confidence into college. I eventually even changed my major to fitness because I wanted to share this with everybody. It was so life-changing for me. My friends were from a rural community. We're all farm kids. I saw a lot of my friends like struggling after high school with their workplace or they're going to university. And I wondered why I wasn't. And it was really fitness. You know, again, I wasn't turning into a bodybuilder, powerlifter, exceptional athlete. I just had this switch flip for me. And so in college, I changed my major. My parents were like, is there such a thing as a job in fitness? And that's really what got me started down the track. Before long, I was a personal trainer and opening a gym.
Wow. I wonder what it was. Was it just body image? Was it discipline? Was it camaraderie with your friend? What was it that actually started to change it so that you were making eye contact, your confidence started to increase?
body image is probably part of it, but you remember, Matt, when you're a teenager, like it feels like your body's just out of control. Like suddenly it's changing and your feet are big now and you feel like you're tripping over your tongue and you've got acne and all this stuff. And working out, I mean, it improves proprioception and it improves posture and it clears up a lot of the chemical stuff that's going on inside you and it clears up the chemical stuff that's going on in your brain at the same time. And it felt like within 2 months, that stuff was just gone. And I was completely alive in my own skin again. I had taken control of my body. And I think that was really what led me to say like, oh, okay, I can do the things that the cool kids do. I don't have to act like them or I can choose.
Awesome. Well, for our listeners here, I'll just bookmark it that the first story that Chris shared, it's a story that so many of us can relate to, is that idea that we may have been a little bit awkward or may have been a little bit of a place in high school, especially where we were seeking our identity or seeking to grow our confidence. And Chris just shared openly that, yeah, that was hard for him too. So thank you, Chris, for starting it off for us. What's the next place that you learned a big lesson, something may have been challenging for you?
Well, this is probably the big one. So I opened up a gym because I couldn't make a living as a personal trainer. And I really wanted to be working in fitness. But by 2005, I had a new wife, a new baby. We had a brand new house. And she was the breadwinner. I was making maybe $19,000 a year as a personal trainer. And I was working about 13 hours a day. And eventually, I just realized there's no way I can make a living at this. I had this one day when I worked 13 hours straight and I took home $205. And I did the math and I thought, this isn't enough. Even if I did this 25 days of the month, I couldn't pay all of our bills doing this. So a client was trying to push me to open my own gym and he wanted to be an investor. There were two of them. So we started kind of half-heartedly looking for places and there was nothing that I could afford, nothing I was willing to take a risk on. There was no way I was going to quit the job that I had. I wasn't that confident. And then one day after touring a potential location, I walked into the fitness studio where I worked and the owner had found out. He was like, I know that you're out there looking to open a gym to compete with me, but I also know that you're broke. So I'm going to let you work your last 2 weeks and then you're gone.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
But it pushed me to do it.
Okay.
So we opened up and we actually rented an apartment above this wedding planner's shop. It had carpet and wallpaper and like it was somebody's apartment. And we were basically running a gym in there. It was tiny, tiny. And we did okay. But by 2008, I said, okay, now I'm working 15 hours a day. I'm making $40,000 a year, but it's still not enough. We're broke and we're arguing over the grocery bill at home. And I had even opened a second location thinking like, that's how you double your income. You have two gyms. But really, it was pulling me backward because the CrossFit gym was bankrupting me, really. I had this amazing stroke of luck in that I sat on a park bench and I said, okay, Chris, you're not figuring this out. You're working hard. You're smart, but you're not just going to figure this out. Like you need to find somebody to help you. And I think like if I hadn't hit that low point, I never would have gotten over my own ego and asked for help, but found a mentor. This guy was just this incredible success story. I got extremely lucky. He had just turned around our local steel mill. He decided he was going to mentor five business owners before he left town for retirement in Florida. And I got in and he started turning my gym around. I said, okay, I can't forget this. This is so important. I really can't even afford to pay this service. Like the first check that I wrote to this guy should have bounced. I need to really retain this. So I started just writing it all down because that's how I learn and that's how I think is through writing. The first lesson that he told me was, Chris, your gym is not good. You should not be advertising a gym that's not good. Fix your gym and then we'll advertise it. So I called my blog don'tbuyads.com as a reminder to myself that I wasn't ready to pay for advertising yet.
Okay.
Yeah. And so in the next three and a half years, as my gym went from like failing and bankrupt to successful, one tiny painstaking step at a time, I wrote about it every single day and I put it all on don'tbuyads.com. And I still leave that blog up. And eventually what happened was that people started to read the blog. And CrossFit linked to the blog, but so did a lot of other people. And if anybody was out there looking for help growing their gym or being a fitness professional, this was a great place to find like honesty and transparency. You know, here's this guy and he is saying, I can't afford to pay for the expensive cheese at home. Like this whole time I was just writing love letters to myself. And after 3.5 years of this, I got a phone call at my gym and it was a gym owner down in Fort Lauderdale. And she said, Chris, there are 14 of us here. We're struggling. We can't figure it out. We've passed around the hat, and I think we've got enough money to fly you down here and pay for one hotel night. Will you come down? And I said, yeah, I could do it, but I can't afford to pay for any of this either. She said, okay, we've got you, we think. So I flew down. I wanted to give them things to do, not just stand up there and lecture in front of them. I thought, okay, well, I'll pull like my top 20 blog posts. I'll put them in a workbook and I'll print it off. We'll do all the exercises as we go. So they'll leave with all the things that I had to build for my gym, for their gym. But it was super expensive to do the printing. And this was before the days when you could just like print, ship and print online and stuff. The cheapest and easiest way to actually move paper back then was to self-publish in a vanity press. I learned about that by reading Seth Godin's blog. He recommended this vanity publisher called Lulu.com. I took this Word document of blog posts and I uploaded it to Lulu, and Lulu said, okay, I can do that. You know, it's $8 per copy, but you have to like have a cover. And so I hand drew this cover in Microsoft Paint. And
man, back in the like, day, the early entrepreneur days, man.
Oh yeah.
I remember that day.
This is 2012. I mean, it seems like an eon ago. I show up at this gym and I ship 20 copies, optimistically thinking there might be more people show up. I think there were maybe 18 gyms there. The book was this green cover, hand-drawn picture of a head with two brains in it. It had a table of contents, but it didn't have page numbers, which made no sense. And probably half of the images were like copyrighted, but I didn't know what that was.
Awesome.
So I spoke for a day. Most of the people, I cannot overstate how junky this book was, okay? Like most of the people didn't take it with them. They just left it behind. So I didn't even take a copy with me, Matt. But then something kind of crazy happened, and that is that Amazon acquired Lulu.com. And in the next year, I sold 26,000 copies of that book, and it became like the best-selling fitness business book of all time. And that's when people really started to call for advice.
What? Wow. Yeah. Wow.
It was crazy.
Whoa. To go from Microsoft, like making it your own, Microsoft Paint, and then being able to, a year later, has sold 26,000 copies, and now it's the best-selling How to Build a Gym handbook of all time. Awesome. Wow. What was that feeling like? Walk us through that year of as you started to see the numbers pile up. How did that feel? Did it trip your ego? Because you mentioned a second ago that you finally let go of your ego and asked for help. So that was just an amazing thing for you to hear you say. But yeah, what was that like that year?
Well, part of that process was also changing my brain. And I really want to talk about that today because I do think that optimism is a practice and I had to learn it and I still have to practice it every day. But what happened was, so Amazon acquires it and they send me this email and they're like, you need to register for a US-based employment insurance number. And I had gone to college in the States, so I already had one. So I just popped that in and whatever. And they're like, okay, well, enter your email address for payment. And, oh, okay. You know, so I put my email address in. And then the first month I get this check. They would mail a check actually back then from Amazon for $279. And I take it home to my wife and I'm like, this seems like a scam. Like, is this a, what? She's like, I don't, just cash it. Let's like take it to the bank and let them tell you if it's a scam. And of course that was $279 US, which might've been 320 Canadian. So we cash it. I just went, well, there's our mortgage payment next month, done. And then the next month it was 400 and then 800 and these checks kept coming in and I thought like, this is it. I was losing money, but my gym was doing a lot better and I was making money from this book. Like we're covered. There's going to be a Christmas after all. Then the phone started ringing. The first one was this woman named Ginger in Jersey and she had this yoga studio that wasn't doing well. And she's like, I've had mentors before. How much to mentor me? Honestly, Matt, I just yelled out the biggest number I could think of, like $100 an hour, like with three digits. And she's like, sounds good. I'll take 15 hours. And I went, what? Like, did you hear me right? That's 1500 American dollars. And she's like, yeah, good. And then within 2 weeks, I had four of those. And I remember going home and saying to Robin, imagine if I had 10 of these, that would replace our entire income. So that was about 2014. And today, Two Brain Business has 1,000 gyms worldwide with 70 mentors on staff, all successful gym owners. And we've got about 2,000 alumni.
Wow. So pause, listeners, if you're hearing this, this is the story of the man who went from, are you sure you want to hire me at $100? Did you hear me right? to now 70 mentors on staff and multiple 2,000 plus gyms being impacted around the world right now. And it's just, it's an incredible. And did you hear the humility Chris has shared this entire story? I'm not hearing an arrogance like, I've made it. And now I'm like, cause I hear that sometimes, Chris, players who have gotten much bigger than they ever imagined. And you're there. And I love the way you're able to be relatable and your storytelling is just so easy to relate to. And so this is cool. I'm curious, if you're growing that fast, if you're getting that many book sales and all of a sudden you're from here to here, what was like, where were some of the places in there that it was a little bit out of control? It was just a little bit too much or just any other stuff? We'd love to hear.
Well, I mean, the fun part about this, honestly, Matt, is not the money. It's the learning that has to happen, because at every step along the way, it's always me holding the company back. You know, I was the problem. When the company reached $240,000 a year in revenue, I was what was stopping us. And so I got a mentor. When we reached $1 million a year in revenue, I was what was stopping us. And so I worked on the next level with that mentor. And now with a company that does well over $10 million a year, I'm still what's stopping us from getting bigger. So anytime there's a sticking point or we reach any kind of plateau in client headcount, I always know to look within first and say, what is it about me that's stopping us from growing? The people who are on my team are way better than me at their jobs. And we all hear you're supposed to hire people who are better than you and specialists work for generalists and all that stuff. But the bottom line is, like, you have to be confident enough in yourself to say, I'm just going to let you run the marketing and I'm going to let you deliver our primary service. I'm going to let you run the website and all this. And that, honestly, man, that takes a lot.
It takes a heck of a lot. So any entrepreneur out there who's listening, Chris just gave us a masterclass right here, quite possibly. And I have a coaching practice too, coaching in a different vertical than you. And it's probably the biggest lesson. And just to hear Chris say this out loud, and I want to get into your journaling in a second, because you said that's the way you learn. He just gave us a journal question or something to think about, team. I wrote down, how might I be the bottleneck in my own operation? Or how might you, as the owner or the leader, be holding the entire organization back? And if you're not able to answer that, then how might you find a mentor to help you figure out how you're in the way and help you expose your blind spot? That's all the stuff I just heard him say, right?
Yeah.
So you can tell that he's speaking from experience, not just theory, because any person that speaks in theory, they know how to solve that in theory. But in practice, you don't solve it by thinking. You solve it by getting a mentor. You solve it by learning from someone who's already done it. It's really hard, at least in my experience, it's really hard to take the next level if you're just trying to sit there and think it, do it on your own, which is the way so many of us are taught to do it. Just go figure it out. And I think that helps to some level.
Yeah.
Kudos to you, my friend. Just you're speaking like a man who's been there and doing that. And just kudos to your humility.
Well, like, humility is a practice also, Matt. I have enough mentors in my life who will remind me that there's usually, if you fix the owner, you fix the business. And they'll often help me chisel off the parts of the marble slab that aren't parts of the statue underneath, you know, as Bruce Lee used to put it. So now I have business mentors, and I also have psychotherapists that I work with all the time to help with getting rid of bad habits and misperceptions and bad mindsets and things like that.
I'm curious what you look for in a mentor. You have several. So what does that look like to you?
Well, it depends. So, like, I almost think of things as like wartime and peacetime. And for the last 3 years, gyms have kind of been in this wartime state. And so their needs and my needs have been more immediate. It's hard to see the big picture when you've got 800 of your 1,000 gyms closed down. And so in those cases, the mentors that I would seek are very specialized. Here is how to, like, perform well on Zoom. We would bring people in for that. We brought in Jocko Willink to talk about resilience. And we would bring in Seth Godin to talk about real marketing and what that means. The mentors that I was working with at that time were really around, like, my personality. So I was working with Todd Herman, the author of The Alter Ego Effect, for about 2 years in there. When that was over, I started working with people who coach business coaches, like Taki Moore, Kerry Wilkerson. And we just talked about, like, expanding a coaching practice, but also how to get better results for your clients all the time. And that's what I'm always focused on right now, is just how do you optimize the results for the clients? And so the mentors that I work with are generally special. For example, like, one guy's a course specialist right now. And then I work with Bonnie Skinner from Level Up Coaching on myself. She's a registered psychotherapist. I work with Carrie Wilkerson on scaling large coaching companies because she's done this over and over with people like Ryan Dice. So there's different mentors that serve different functions in my life.
You know, what's fascinating to me is that here is a man, I'm speaking with Chris, who if you've found some level of success, whatever you might define that as, I would say one level might be someone who's successfully built an eight-figure company or community. And you're still hungry for learning, and you're still hungry to have mentors, and still, and you're openly sharing this, and you're asking for help. And you contrast that, someone who has reached this level of success, with a person who is still on the starting block, wondering why they're not successful. They don't ask for help. They don't have a mentor.
Totally.
The idea of even having a therapist, a psychotherapist, even sharing that with people, it might be something they would feel guilty or shameful to even say those words. I just want to applaud that this team, this is not only just walking the walk, this is practicing and talking the talk. This is how you do it. What might be your mechanism for consistent learning? And Chris is giving us a bird's eye, like front row seat to that. You know, so Chris, you said you wanted to talk for a little while about the two brain part of it. You had some ideas to share. I'd love to just open the floor up and give you the mic to share where you'd like to take us, Chris.
Okay. Well, so first, there was kind of like this third epoch of hard choices to make.
Yes.
So sorry, Matt, I kind of took us way off track
oh,
there.
That's
but
good.
About a year and a half ago, our chief financial officer said, Chris, you know, the other people in the C-suite are starting to complain about you. They think that you're complacent or bored, or you're just like, you're not into it. You're not really invested anymore. And it's not like you're not trying hard. And it's not like you don't care. It's just like you don't show up to meetings as fiery as you once did. And I said, yeah, you know, honestly, I don't know what the next level is for me. Like, we're making more money than I can ever spend. The team is happy. The clients are getting great results. And when the gyms get great results, they make people healthier. Like, so we're making this impact. What else is there? And he said, well, what made you happiest last year? Like, what was your winning moment? And I said, well, that's really easy. When everything got locked down in our city, my wife and I decided the best way that we could help kids in foster care who couldn't even go to school anymore, they couldn't even really leave the house, was to just buy them all bicycles. And so we wound up buying like 55 brand new bikes for kids in foster care. And that was like my win of the year. It was awesome. My CFO at the time said, well, how much did that cost you? And I said, well, you know, between that and some other stuff, like, I don't know, 50,000. And he's like, well, what if you could 10X that? What if you could buy 500 bikes a year, or give away 500,000 a year, or even give away $1 million a year? And I said, well, that would feel great. Like, it would feel like this is the purpose. And he's like, well, then why don't you just make lots of money and give it away? And that for me was such a paradigm shift, honestly, Matt, because, and the more I think about it, the more profound that is. And I don't take credit for that. That was the CFO's idea, his quote, make lots of money and give it away. The reality is, like, there are very few people in our culture, even in our open market system, who are good at making money. And most of us are raised with a scarcity mindset about money. We're taught to hoard it. We're taught that wealthy people must have like taken that money from somebody else or tricked people. Even Disney movies, you watch a Disney movie, every rich person is a villain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But the reality is that if I make lots of money, I'm doing something that very few people are good at. And I can just give it away because very few people are good at making money for people who need it, even when they do need it. You know, I mean, Mother Teresa, a saint, but Bill Gates paid for 600,000 vaccinations in sub-Saharan Africa. I mean, you got to use your gift. And if you're good at making money, like, use that gift. That really fired me up. So I went right back into Two Brain with a renewed sense of passion. I broke off just about every other business that I own and said, this is my engine for producing money so that I can give it away to people who are not good at making money.
Wow. Wow. Oh, that's exciting. And another thing that really kind of just fires me up is to hear this, and to hear this from someone who has had a level of success, is that people always say, man, I want to make more money, or I want to get to a place where I'm rich, whatever that means. I want money. And to meet people that once they have found a place where they might have some level of financial stability or security, to see what they do next, that's always inspiring. What do they do? Right? And to see you, what you're doing next is you're A, continuing to learn, B, continuing to invest in yourself and your people, C, you're figuring out a way to help others. Are you running for office anytime soon? Can we vote for you?
I mean, no. No, thank you.
That sounds pretty darn cool. Thanks. Awesome. So you had this renewed sense of passion and purpose after that, which could have been a conversation that could have derailed. It could have gone a different direction.
It could have. Yeah. Yeah. It could have been, well, I'm just going to sell this and go to the beach.
Yeah.
But it does tie into the concept of two brains business. In my gym, we work with a lot of people who maybe they've had a traumatic brain injury, or even they just have autism or ADHD or something. And we can actually rewire literally a lot of their brain through exercise. Now, that has limited effects, but the effects are really profound, especially when somebody is pretty new. A kid can come in and they have like no sense of locomotion. They can't ride a bicycle. And if we can teach them how to move well enough to ride a bicycle, to run and play, to wrestle around with other kids, they're going to have an easier time making friends and things just kind of snowball. We've done this 100 times. So when I was starting the mentorship practice, I called it two brain business because there are really like two hemispheres to your brain, just like there are two sides to your business. One is the tactical. You have to have your systems and your operations absolutely dialed. The other side is the owner, and the owner's brain and the owner's skill set and the owner's thoughts are just as important as having the tactics. So early on, when I was working with my mentor, I had to learn how to cultivate the right mindset for success. It didn't matter what books he told me to read, like there's stacks of them here. It didn't matter what advice he gave me. If I wasn't acting on those things and if I wasn't doing them with the right mindset, I probably would never have been successful. And when I was preparing for your show today, I opened up a book that I read back then called Drive. Do you know this book,
Dan? I do. On the show. Love it. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the exercises in that book is just like noticing when you have negative thoughts and noticing when you have positive thoughts. And I can't remember if he suggested it because this was 15 years ago, but, or if I just started counting, but he said, most people don't have a single positive or happy thought all day and they don't even realize it. And so I just started counting and I'd be driving to work and I'd be mad about something and I'd say, oh, well, there's a negative thought. And then I would just try and balance that by immediately having a positive thought. Oh, you know, my baby did this funny thing last night. And then I would get mad at the driver at the red light. And I try to balance that out. Like, oh, at least I got 7 hours of sleep last night. And over time, what actually started to change was I began to, number one, balance out my unhappiness. And number two, start to look for things that made me happy. I wasn't like condemning myself or trying not to think bad thoughts or trying to hold it all in. What I was actually doing was just slowly replacing the negativity in my brain with positivity. And to me, that is the process of learning optimism, because I just suddenly got good at noticing things that made me happy. And there's that old, I don't know if it's actually Cherokee analogy of like the two wolves at the door and they're fighting over the food. And it's like, which wolf wins? It's the one you feed. And if you just feed all the positive stuff that goes into your brain, there's just no room for the negative stuff anymore. It starves and it goes away. And so that's how I learned to become an optimist.
Oh, what a great story. Your storytelling is just so, you started over here, you had me the whole time. And then at the end, the punchline, it's just such a great learning lesson. You're good, man. This is real easy to listen to you talk. You
know, thanks.
So if we could talk about optimism for a second, then what would you say optimism, definition of that might be?
Well, for me, optimism is just being positive enough to recognize experiences when they're in front of you. It's really like you're constantly working on creating happiness for yourself. So you have to start with the realization that nobody else can make me happy. I'm happy being on this show. Absolutely. I'm happy to meet you, Matt. But I can't say, well, I'm in a bad mood, but Matt's going to cheer me up when I see him. It's really up to me. And once you learn that, at first, you start the practice of noticing like what actually does make me happy. And then that becomes your default setting. And so to me, optimism is you are an optimist when seeking positivity is your default.
Mm. What other core values or thinking systems are just foundational for you? You think about just what makes up your own mental operating system, Chris?
Well, so number one is like we take a very scientific approach to everything that we do. So I'm a natural skeptic, which some people would say is pessimism, but it's not. It's just I'm constantly changing my beliefs about things as I see proof. I'm open to change as long as I see proof. I'm naturally skeptical. Like I question things until I'm satisfied that they're true. And then, hey, I'm all in on them until something better comes along. That's one thing. The second thing is that I now understand, you know, at 48, what I didn't understand at 30, which is just the doctor's old adage of left alone, most things will heal themselves by morning. I think when we're younger, we try to control everything that happens in and around us. And the reality is that we can't. And the more that you can let that go, 80% of the time, everything just turns out as it should anyway. That's a big part of it too. I have core values about learning and stuff too, Matt, but I won't go through the whole list here. The bottom line is like, you have to practice and surround yourself with things that bolster that practice. You have to be active about it. So the first thing I do every single day is what I would call a writing meditation. I sit down, I open up a website called 750words.com. It's just a blank screen and you get the junk out of your head. All the stuff you don't want to keep, you just put it out there on the internet. Nobody else ever sees it, but it's gone out of your head. And now there's more room for the positive stuff to blossom and grow.
Wow. So what do you type into this? Like, for example, today or yesterday when you did it most recently, what was your entry about?
Well, I just happened to have that tab open.
Oh, excellent.
I said, I'm up pretty early, 5:20 a.m. today to start writing. I might go back to this time if I can get to bed on time. It's Friday. I woke up stressed because, and I just mentioned a couple things, got that all out of my brain. Then I was talking about a hobby site that I have called businessisgood.com. There's nothing to buy on that site. I just publish stuff for entrepreneurs there as I think of it. And it got redone yesterday. So I mentioned what I liked about that. And then I wrote a love letter to my clients, which I love to do in the mornings. Most of the time those get published. And then we write kind of a different but equally good love letter to our audience. So we have about 40,000 people that read our emails every day. And about 9,000 people who look at our Facebook posts. And we can obviously tell all these things. And I try to write them a love letter every day that will actually help them and give them something tactical to do. And then I responded to something that somebody said yesterday inside my fitness gym that I didn't really like. And I didn't want to say it to them, but I wanted it said so that it was out of my head. So I just typed it in 750 words. And then I was at 750 words and it said, you're on like a 18-day streak. And done. All that crap's out of my head. I'm ready for good stuff to grow.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. Go back in time just a couple of minutes because you made something, a big revelation that as coaches, when you get it, you get it. But if you don't, then you don't think that you're a micromanager. You don't think you're a perfectionist. But this idea of letting go of control, can you talk about your relationship with control and just how that has maybe loosened over time?
It's always a dichotomy of, do you want to grow or do you want to have control? And the more controlling you are, the less you can grow because you can't allow anything new to enter your ecosystem. And so you're always going back and forth between, do I just let it go, take my hands off for 4 months, 3 months, 2 months, or do I control it? It's very hard for entrepreneurs and it gets harder the bigger your business gets to actually relinquish control. On the other hand, there's a lot of stuff out there in the business media right now about like, you need to let people make their own mistakes. And while that's true, the valuable part is not in them screwing up. The valuable part is you reviewing those mistakes, stopping the mistakes from happening again, and then somehow leveraging those mistakes to make the business better. And that's what control means. So you go from the front seat of like dictating everything as your business is growing to being in the back seat and kind of being the auditor or the evaluator of what's happening. So around July, I decided we had about 850 gyms at the time. And I said, I'm going to figure out why the top 12.5% of gyms go from $0 to $100,000 a year and on to $1 million. And they can do that in like 2 years. And the other 87.5% of gyms take so much longer. It's not like they're just a month behind. It's like it takes them twice as long. Like, what are these top 12.5% doing differently? And I started digging into our data. And what I found was that these 12.5% were good at thinkers. They had skills that the others didn't. They knew how to focus. They didn't struggle with overwhelm. They were fast action takers. They didn't think like, well, Matt, that's good advice, but let me think about how I can put that in my context. And they don't roll it around. They just do. And they had these other traits. And I said, well, if having those traits is what makes the big difference, then why aren't we teaching those traits to everybody? And so I took this deep dive and I found that I had to teach that to a number of my team. And then we taught it to our clients. And now everybody's getting way better results way faster than ever, like incredible results.
Yeah.
And as a side effect, the business is growing. And so this is what I mean by being the auditor. Like, you're always looking for ways to make things better. it's very tempting for me to just keep my head down and stay in the business and keep tweaking, tweaking, tweaking. But if I do that, the business won't grow. And so now that I've been spending 6 months doing that, I'll take 3 months completely hands off, let the thing run, and just kind of let it grow on its own. And that's exactly what happened. We had our first $1 million a month last month because my hands were out of the machine and I'm not slowing the gears down anymore.
And such great life lessons, business lessons, just lessons about letting go of control, about being the bottleneck. Thank you. This has been really cool to hear you speak on the subject. Chris, where are the different places that we can find you, follow you, learn from you? Give us the list, because I'm sure that we have some people out there with pens ready to write it down.
Thanks. Everything's at twobrainbusiness.com, Matt. That's my, you know, heart and soul in the business world. I do have a hobby blog that's businessisgood.com. And the goal there is just to give resources to young and starting entrepreneurs. I get luckily invited to speak at local universities fairly often. And so I want to give these kids help to grow really fast. I really believe that entrepreneurship is what's required to save our collective economies now. And I want to give them like the firepower to do that. Those are probably the best two places to find me.
Twobrainbusiness.com. I'm on it right now. You can get to his blog. You can get into the newsletter right away. There are many, many resources here that will apply if you're in the fitness industry or you want to level up your business skills and your mentality. So much here. And you can also, you can apply for mentorship, all different things here at twobrainbusiness.com. This is pretty cool.
Thank you.
This has been awesome, Chris. I just appreciate you for joining us today. I'd love to wrap up the lightning round and ask you a couple of just questions about your opinion on a couple things. For one,
Here we go.
Let's challenge the brain here. All right. So first, if there is 1 to 3 books that you might encourage or recommend to people out there, what might be 1 to 3 books that have had an impact in your life, Chris?
Good to Great. I read it every year. And this year I indulged myself by reading like all 5 books in the series. And I even have an autographed copy of that. Jim Collins, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
He actually left a voicemail on my phone a couple years ago, and I've been saving that voicemail for years now.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's crazy. The guy's a hermit. It's hard to get. Another one is The Go-Giver. And I actually just pulled this out to show you today, because if anybody in your audience hasn't read this, it is life-changing, and it explains exactly how I want to show up in the world.
Awesome.
Yeah. I actually wrote a book years ago called Help First. And if I had found The Go-Giver before that, I wouldn't have written it. I would have just bought everybody a copy of The Go-Giver.
Nice.
And then Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I think is probably the third one that I recommend. I buy like 20 copies at a time and I hand them out every time a kid in my family is graduating from high school. They get a copy of Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you for the books. And let's keep going to music next. If there is a musician or a genre or a song that really inspires you, fills your bucket, what's your musical taste, Chris?
This morning I listened to Let It Be by the Beatles on my drive to work, and now that's stuck in my head. So that's like, you know, it's an earworm song. It's all I can think about, but it's also kind of been my mantra for the day. Just let it be, let it roll. You know, if things go wrong, you can always step in and fix it, but things are going great right now. Do not interfere.
I love the way you just said that. And a side note, one of my songs, maybe in a similar ilk, is a song by Steve Winwood from the late 80s, Roll With It. So I listen to that song quite frequently. So thank you for Let It Be. And then to the last question, and we'll wrap with this. This is the Eternal Optimist podcast. And if I say the words eternal optimist, what might eternal optimist mean to you, Chris?
To me, eternal optimist means being diligent enough in the practice of optimism that it extends throughout your entire lifespan.